This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the 5-Year Plan podcast, episode 505, following a very early Christmas gift from JD in the 5-Year Plan James MacArthur interview, which is available now on your podcast feed. Today, though, you're with me, Joe Walker, ahead of what is a big festive week for Palace, and with me for this episode, firstly, a welcome return to Ben Long. Great to have you on again, Longy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Good to be back.
Yeah, always good to have you on. I thought of you... Recently, actually, there was a tweet, I think, from the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund account, which obviously that I know the fund has closed because of for various reasons, which I think you've explained on here before. Yeah. But the remaining kind of surplus funds and stuff have been distributed between Palace and Brighton charities. There was a lovely post from them recently about their donation to Palace for Life and the bespoke kit that's gone to the Down Syndrome Eagles, which was... There's some really brilliant photos of them and how delighted they look to get their first ever specific kit. And yeah, I just, even as that fund and the organization has kind of closed up, it's still doing really awesome things. And yeah, you know, for all the love lost that will be this Thursday, you know, let's start on a good note at least with them. And
I was blown away, to be honest, mate. I had a quick chat with them after the last game that we played, which was the final ever game. And I said, look, if you're looking to donate any money to like our sort of way, please hit up the Foundation, Palace for Life Foundation. And when I saw that they donated £8,000, I was literally, that blew me away, really. And it sort of cemented how good a togetherness we'd sort of formed, regardless of our rivalry in real terms, like Crystal Palace and Brighton. But all the good things. And then the pictures the other day of the guys in the new kits was just a heartwarming moment.
Yeah, beaming. All content that comes out of the Down Syndrome Eagles team from that Vieira chat, the Hodgson visit, where they're sort of piggyback. It's just all of it's brilliant and worth checking out if you haven't already, listener. Joining me and Longy today, the fan Z to my Sunji High, it's Jack Pierce. How are you?
He's a guy from Strength, my man. Good. Yeah, funny enough, I was thinking about Fanji High not too long ago.
Yeah, as was I. Did you see the Hometown China supporters? That was
yes.
That's all good. Oh, I love that. So for those that don't know, the Liverpool game, the Etihad, and I believe they're hunting for Chelsea tickets also. There are a pair of Palace supporters who go by the group Hometown China. They've got this really amazing banner of Fanji sort of in his full kit that I think the stewards tried to like take off them on Saturday, but they got a bit of help making sure that they kept it. And one of them is wearing a what would be, I guess, what, 2000-2001 TFG Sports Palace kit with Fan 5 on the back.
Yeah.
Which must be worth an absolute fortune, by the way.
How much would you give for that, Joe? I think you'd go into the hundreds, mate.
Yeah, I'd start selling computers and laptops and phones, I think, to get that. Oh my goodness, I'm in awe of them. And it's that opener there is a tribute to them, I think, because yeah,
great shout. My as a child, one of the biggest claims to Palace I ever had was that my best friend's dad sold Fangie, or more likely, Fangie's representative, a car, right, before he signed. And that was the most exciting thing. When you're 10, that was about as good as magical. It gets. Yeah, that was amazing. I think he hit up Beckenham Mitsubishi, and that was
nice.
Big news back in the day. But yeah. What a great shout. Sun Ji-hai, who went on to probably have the better career in English football.
Yeah.
But Fan seems to be the one that represents the biggest cult icon for Palace.
Yeah, I think Sun Ji-hai went sort of... left again within 6 months and then came back to England when he was ready, I guess. Mm. But Fan gave it a good shift. I remember, maybe I was too young, but I imagine in my mind that he had an amazing defensive display against Liverpool in the cup semi-final.
Everyone played 11 out of 10 that night.
Yeah, basically. We got the result. But it was good to get the nostalgia going. Not that I even needed it on Saturday, because what's happening right now, it was a nice lift on the weekend. And
yes.
Before
we get started, a note to you, Joe, your first hosting of a not defeat.
Yes, I almost forgot. It's it was a relief. It was a huge relief. And to put it this way, I went out on Saturday. I went partying and I went to a day party. No signal there. I just thought, that's okay. This is a game I tend to write off. And I was giddy. I was squealing like a piglet when the messages started coming through. Couldn't believe it. Yes, hopefully a run that now, this is the, I don't know, what's the equivalent? This is the 2-0 win over Chelsea, the Hodgson one with, you know, the two wingers up front. Here, from now on, it's smooth sailing, hopefully.
We're flying now. Okay, I like it.
There we go. Now, before we get into that game, a mention for our sponsor. FYP is sponsored by Green King Sport. It's the season for festive football, and the best way to watch it is, of course, your local Green King Sport pub. It's Christmas, a great time to catch up with friends, old and new, so get the team to your local for refreshing pints, delicious food, and live action of every Christmas cracker. That's every fixture from TNT Sports, Sky Sports, and Amazon live at Green King Sport pubs. That includes Palace's fixtures with Brighton and Chelsea over the next week or so. So you can watch every goal, every dodgy VAR, and every huge moment going on in the Premier League in an atmosphere worth sharing. And make sure, if you do go, to download the Green King Sport app, and you'll get 10% off drinks every single time there's sport on the telly in there. Right. Man City away, Saturday. Where to begin? I'll try in chronological order. I think the place to start is 2 p.m., the 11 going out. So the Sun ran a piece, quoted essentially public reaction. You get this a lot with the kind of paper. They'll go, fans respond to, and it's just a load of tweets put into an article. And the headline was, someone said it was one of the worst Premier League starting lineups of all time, which I guess in a Palace context, possibly not, because it's quite odd. I'll start with you, Jack, because Tyrick Mitchell returns. You have Dean Henderson committing to start. That was quite of a 50-50, an interesting dilemma, because the word seemed to suggest that he wasn't ready, but we kind of needed him to just play through any pain. You've got Ebbs returning on the bench. There's glimmers of hope there, but because of existing absentees, Will Hughes is ill overnight. Trying to think who else. Jefferson Lerma can't play. Edward missing. We're expecting some gaps. Are you missing as well? Were you expecting a 5-4-1 with Joel Ward at centre-back?
That's like the exciting interpretation of it. I mean, a lot of people saw it as like an 8-1-1.
Yeah.
literally, Elise and Mateta being the only outlets. But no, I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. But we've talked about previously this season, it's now getting to the point where you just need to play your best 11 players. Mm. And that's what I felt Saturday was. He was just sticking out the 11 players that we may not consider to be the best, but they're certainly the most trusted by Roy's eye, and he got everyone he could out on the pitch, and quite quickly had to turn to the bench and put his trust a bit of youth. I'm sure we'll talk plenty about David Ozo and his wonderful performance, but I wasn't expecting it, but it's clearly what they worked on, because even in that first 20 minutes, even though City created a few openings, we did look quite tight. The back five, or certainly the back three, looked quite well oiled, and they were working well together. But City will always create chances. They'll create chances against the best teams in Europe, let alone an injury-ravaged Palace. So, yeah, it was interesting. And I think we need to give credit to Roy Ray and Paddy for the work they put in that week, and clearly built upon the Liverpool performance, even if the result wasn't what they wanted.
Yeah, Longy, I don't think anyone expected to go up there and take anything in the situation that we were at. But based, were you quite happy up to the point of, let's say, that City taking the lead, that how we set up, the way, if we were going to take something out of the game with that 11, it was going to have to look like the way we were playing? It was just kind of having to take our medicine and trust in the management. Were you with them all the way from the start? Or were you, I saw a lot of discussion, you know, about, you know, there were five academy kids on the bench in the end, and or five youngsters anyway. And the idea of maybe not to write off this game, but is this the game where we should actually see some minutes for some of those? And the starting lineup was almost an indication of, well, maybe there isn't that faith put in them yet. And we'll get to the second half or even the first sub and how that changes things. But did you kind of just, even at the start of this game, are you kind of just respecting and appreciating this is just going to be, have the way it might, this has to be the way it is?
Yeah, I think when you're Crystal Palace, you go to Man City away, you ain't going to go there and go toe-to-toe with them. I feel like even when we've had them good results in the past, obviously one was under Roy and then the other one under Patrick, I don't think we really went toe-to-toe with them. We had a bit of good fortune when Vieira was the manager because they had a player sent off and it sort of turned the game in our favour a little bit more. But yeah, as I say, Crystal Palace can't go to Man City and go toe-to-toe because you'll soon find yourself 3-0 down very quickly. So... I mean, I was having flashbacks of when Allardyce was the manager and the formation and the team he picked that day. Mm-hmm. I think Jeff Schlupp was playing in the back three that day.
He was.
Yeah. And so it was very much of the senior players that were fit were lumped together into a team, a formation. But I read a lot of negative stuff on Twitter during the first sort of 20 minutes. And, what's the point? Well, after 95 minutes, there was the point, and that's what we were there setting up to do, staying in the game as long as possible or not going too far behind, which isn't great. It's not great to sit there and actually accept that, but sometimes you have to do these things, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the main contentions I think you get some people with Roy. I think the hallmarks of a Roy Hodgson are maximising what's in front of him for that game and also staying in the game. And to Roy Hodgson, that tends to mean, even at 1-0, he's quite happy to kind of not change things too drastically because he's got trust in something happening. And it only tends to be a 2-0 where he might start making some changes in the system. And funny how it plays out, because, Jack, I feel like this game might be... I don't want to over-egg it too much, but I think the circumstances... it's almost like a perfect storm where this might be a transformative game for kind of the rest of the season and Roy Hodgson's Palace, because Joel Ward going off, a hamstring injury, I believe, so that might be a while.
Mm-hmm.
With the combination of Lerma's injury, with Will Hughes being suddenly ill, it means David Ozo comes on 25 minutes, half an hour in. So he's played what? I think he's the most he's played in a game in a Premier League. He's had a couple of appearances, but it tends to be 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Suddenly you're asking him to do an hour plus injury time in the biggest game of the season, opponents-wise. And for all the people that are saying this is a player that should get more opportunities, he's in because he has to be, but then puts in a performance that, you know, you really think is going to earn a lot of trust and goodwill with the management. Because, I mean, I've tried to watch, I've got to watch a significant chunk of the game back now, and I'm really delighted for him just generally, but puts in the kind of performance that is very easy to get behind as a fan, never mind the management.
When I saw him come on so early, I fully anticipated that he might have to be subbed again with maybe 15 or 10 to go, just because he's not played that amount of minutes in such an intense environment. I think that was his second Premier League appearance. His first one was against Newcastle for literally 3 or 4 minutes back in February. So to throw him in there shows that he's clearly shown something in training. And I was delighted for him. I think he mixed it. He was composed on the ball. Did everything that I think a lot of Palace fans who are familiar with the youth, or the younger squads, have recognised in him. But there's definitely a player who could, if given the opportunity, take it, and he did. And who knows, he may well have also contributed to the questions, all the decisions that are going to have to be made in January in terms of kind of adding to that part of the squad. But incredibly mature performance in that part of the pitch, and shouldn't be lost. It was actually his challenge against Phil Foden that eventually leads to the penalty. So he's contributing as well. He's not just kind of, you know, fitting in. He's doing bits that are actually contributing to important moments of the game. And just to kind of indicate his energy levels, he's actually also up there when the foul's given. He's in the melee that then leads the ball, you know, spiralling out and leading to the penalty award. So fantastic performance. And the Matthijs Frantzer, again, number one. I think you're right. I think it could be that point of the season which people would hopefully in months to come consider the game that Roy decided that, yeah, some of these players are ready. I haven't bought all the criticism about Roy. I haven't felt that we've talked previously, after the Bournemouth game, I was frustrated that France didn't get 10, 15 minutes there, but you still have to trust the manager's judgment. And he clearly felt that France could come in and impact that last 15 once we got that goal back from Mateta, and we'll come on to Jean-Philippe as well, who was another positive. But yeah, really pleased, and individuals who had really great days that they'll remember for the rest of their career, I hope.
Yeah, I don't know, have both of you seen this? I think Brazilian TV managed to grab a couple of questions with Roy at the end of the game, the clip circulating. It's very much a diplomatic answer. I think Roy Hodgson very aware that he's answering a question about Matthijs Frantzer to Brazilian television. But it's very much, what interested me, I think he said he's been ready for about a month now, which I thought was quite interesting. But just trying to pick his moments, you can read between the lines. I think there's definitely communication issues for Roy defensively that I think he wants to, that's the sort of thing that he wants to make sure his wingers can get involved in. I think a great, obviously I use a very easy example, but I think Michael Olise's defensive contributions still quite unsung outside of Palace. It's a huge reason why he's kind of gets so much responsibility and freedom as he does, because he would also do the hard work backwards. And I can imagine a young Brazilian teenager might need a little bit more than a few weeks after a quite a long injury to get familiar with that stuff too. But it is promising. And I think Longy, him coming on at, I think he's been planned to be brought on at 2-0 anyway. Yeah. Then JP gets a goal and he is still brought on, which, did that surprise you in the circumstances?
No, I feel like Roy and his game plan was all about staying in the game to 75 minutes. Mm. And he was going to make that change of Frantzer and Ahamada. And then the goal literally he just delayed it for a couple of minutes. So I think he still intended, because I would rather we went there and then go for that. When we pull one goal back, go for it. We lose 3-1, we lose 3-1.
Yeah.
That's what I think most fans would have wanted. And the whole Roy's negative comments from a lot of people is it's not necessarily negativity. It's just, it's how he sees a game going. And like we've said, he stays in a game as long as he can, and then we'll go for it. I think everyone was frustrated after Bournemouth that we didn't go for it at 1-0 down. And I don't think it matters if it's Bournemouth or Man City. Roy's Roy, and that's the way he views a game of football, is he didn't want to change it at 1-0. And then they scored their second goal in injury time, didn't they, that night? Yeah. So, yeah, it didn't really surprise me, to be honest. Touching on David Ozo and how well he did, I think when he made his Premier League debut, and there was a lot of noise about him through the academy, I think some of the stuff, I've heard a few things that it sort of went to his head a little bit, and his performances in the under-21s did drop off after that. And I think as a young footballer, if you sort of start to believe that you've made it when you make your debut in your first team, it can be dangerous. But judging on the way he's sort of come back and hit his form again with the under-21s, and then he's took his opportunity with both hands on Saturday, like, I watched the game the whole 90 minutes back, and he was unbelievable. For an 18-year-old to do what he did, he was literally all over the pitch. He was energy. He was physical. He didn't care. He was playing against Rodri. He was putting it on Rodri. Like, it was superb to see. And he's probably not going to start on Thursday because I think Lerman might be back. But he's certainly ready. As soon as he's called upon, he is ready. He's Premier League ready now, whether he's 18 or 28. I think physically and mentally, he is ready now to be a Premier League footballer whenever he's called upon. So it was really promising. And France are, again, I think it's Roy being very clever. You chuck him in at the wrong time. Like Tottenham, he didn't look very good, but I think it was the wrong time. It was the wrong sort of game for him. And everyone remembers the chance that he missed, which wasn't that easy a chance, but it was the perfect storm for him on Saturday, coming on at that time with the momentum we had. And yeah, he just grabbed it with both hands, and it's just all promising signs. And it's another lift for us fans, because it's been a bit crap the last few weeks, and certainly leading into this busy period at Christmas, there's loads of positives come out Saturday.
Yeah, it's we're simple people, football fans. I think there's one thing that unites us, and I think it is when a young player gets the opportunity. I think it's excitement more than expectation, even if that is a £20 million Brazilian signing. I still think there's relative just genuine excitement for what they can do and supporting those players if the opportunity is there. And I think that even just Francesco sort of speeding past Kyle Walker a couple of times, that's enough. That's enough for supporters to get us going. I'm seeing compilations of that already and stuff like that, which is really quite amusing. But that's all people want to see, and it's stuff like that that makes some of those defeats a lot easier to take sometimes. But it's even better when it contributes to a sort of a rescued point like Saturday. Mateta's name's come up. As cover, when does he play better than when he's sort of weeks away from the transfer window? Do you think, Jack, that likely changes his future here if there is an additional striker available? Do you think that is enough?
Just lift my answer from before Plymouth and put it in here. I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I mean, I think that probably was his best performance in a Palace shirt. Given the job he was asked to do, that lone furrow is no harder than against Man City, whose centre-backs are as technically gifted as anyone said to half. So he really had a hard task. But to keep going, we on this podcast have often talked about him physically and how sometimes he looks like he's labouring after 10, 15 minutes. But to still be right at it, going into the 95th, 96th minute, all credit to him, he was great. But another thing we've also said with him, what he does best is bring the chaos, and that penalty comes about from causing chaos. That is not a phase of football that either manager is training. That is all caused by him being as chaotic as possible, leading to the throw-in, winning the ball back from Bernardo Silva, and then getting in the way of Phil Foden. And that is as clear a penalty as you'll see. So, yeah, I was delighted for him. I don't know what it means for him moving forward. I wonder if he's got a clever agent who just plays kind of roulette in terms of which German club he's going to link with him a couple of weeks ahead of the transfer window. But if he plays like that, you can't argue that he hasn't got a place in this Palace squad. The sad truth is we've not seen a performance at that level since maybe his cameo against Wolves, which was, 3 months ago? So, you know, you need it more regularly than that from JP. But in terms of Saturday, no complaints here. I thought he was absolutely excellent.
2-2 now.
We're in two. Okay. Could have been 3-2. Why did he not fancy? Well, maybe there's a conversation we've had about the penalty. But did he have to go off? Did the trainer have to come on for him or something? Why wasn't he taking the penalty? And then Ebbs, who's actually been our penalty taker, was also on the pitch. But it's still Michael Olise. So I don't know. It went in. That's all I really care about.
It went in. There was a video that's just following the sort of the lead up to the penalty, and you've got Olise and Ebbs having quite a long chat by the penalty spot. Francer kind of steps in and leans in as if to say, anything going, I'll give it a go. And then sort of quietly backs away.
To be respected.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you want from your forward players, as long as they're not doing, what was it, the Benteke against Bournemouth, where you're sort of wrestling it off each other and all that stuff. But another thing with Mateta, I don't know how accurate it is. I know that certainly with possession stats in football and touches, a touch statistically constitutes as you controlling it and then making a pass. But I saw something that said Mateta had four touches in their attacking third of Palace's pitch. So one of those, you imagine, is the goal. One of those is winning the ball back. One of those is possibly the foul for the penalty. And maybe the other one is in the first half with Edison, the Edison incident, which was not in Sky's highlights, was not a match of the day. I think, was it a match of the day in the end?
It was a match of the day, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, on another day, a couple of pods that I've listened to this morning, sort of wider football ones, are sort of asking the question, why wasn't that a red card? I'm not saying it was an obvious situation, but Longy, when you saw that, were you thinking, oh, another game, another ground, we're up against 10 men here?
Yeah, I was still reeling from the IU second yellow card from the week before.
Yeah.
And I was still angry when I saw that challenge, and I was like, that's a red card every week. If Dean Henderson's doing that, he's walking. And yeah, it was one of those. It was probably borderline, he's going away from goal and all that sort of thing. However, if it was Dean Henderson, he's getting sent off. I don't care what anyone says. Mm-hmm. So
Manchester red as well.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So it was one of those. I think we can feel aggrieved. However, we can not as badly as the Liverpool turn of events and the goings on in that game. It weren't as obviously as against us as that. But yeah, it was certainly, I'm adamant if it was Dean Henderson, he would have walked for that.
Yeah.
I think if Paul Tierney gives that as a red, I don't think the VAR overturns it. If Paul Tierney gives that as a yellow, the VAR doesn't overturn it. I think it's all about the on-pitch interpretation of that one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And Longy's point about the touch is probably what does dissuade Paul Tierney from issuing the red there. I don't know. I saw it back quite quickly after it happened, and I did think, if, albeit not at the Etihad, if that had been anywhere, but a Palace goalkeeper sent off for that, I'd be absolutely furious. So I don't know. I'm probably a bit more, I understand why it wasn't. But as Longy says, if that had been in that game at the other end, I think Dean Henderson might be walking and Remy Matthews coming on for the second week in a row getting his gloves warm.
Yeah. On the goalkeeper, I think we should just take a moment for Dean Henderson. Premier League debut for Palace. Really, you know, I would say it still kind of felt like his debut full stop, because what was it, 10, 15, 20 minutes at that Old Trafford game, and he went off after sort of pulling up on a goal kick. Match of Day laughed at him for pulling up with cramp, because, and I'd understand goalies with cramp is quite an unusual thing.
They tried to, but Shay Given quickly corrected him. Was like, no.
Yeah.
Goalkeeper Union, he weren't having any of it.
Backed him fully. Henderson said.
But speaking of debuts, now, I thought Shay Given on Match of the Day, that's one of the best debuts on Match of the Day I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Brilliant. That was quality.
Yeah, he was excellent. So, Henderson himself said, I don't know whether he was joking or not, tongue in cheek, he said, I had some tight socks on, the socks were a bit too tight. But you know, given how some of these true socks and the fact some of the wingers cut the holes in the back, you think, well, maybe. But credit to him, you know, obviously had been injured for a while, and all the talk prior to the game was that probably wouldn't be put in if others were available. But looking around, going, can you just come in a couple of days earlier than you would like to a game? A footballer's never going to say, no, I can't play. And I think Henderson put himself forward in the end. But giving the circumstances, because I would see you're wincing every time he's going down, thinking, oh, no, is he stretched? That save from the, I think, Bernardo Silva one, where he does stay down for a little bit, you do think, you know, if the injury hasn't fully healed, that looks like a sort of fall, the sort of stretch, the sort of spring that could recur an existing problem. But he was another one of many highlights on the day. I mean, it's been a strange time for him at Palace so far, but that sets him well on his way to just be in favour of absolutely everybody, right?
Yeah, for me, it indicates the quality the guy's got, and probably again highlights why, despite many fans questioning why that money was spent on him, because I think if Dean Henderson's not in goal on Saturday, we don't get back in that game. So with that considered, it's added quality to the squad. That save was outstanding. What's even better about that save is the way the ball ricochets across the penalty area. He's not set. And the way Bernardo Silva hits a ball means it's in double quick time, and it's a great save. So really pleased for Dean Henderson. I think he, you know, said in that same interview about his socks that's his first Premier League start for 12 months, so that'll mean a lot for him. And as Selzy said in the post-match, time after time, with Roy and with Dean Kiley as goalkeeping coach, possession is 9/10 of the law. So it's a big day for him. And unsure what the situation with Sam Johnson is, but even if Sam Johnson's back in the next few weeks, depending on what Dean Henderson does this Thursday against Brighton and then against Chelsea after Christmas, it could be Dean Henderson's number one jersey to lose now.
Do you not think that something else at the other end of the pitch, I'm still thinking, Evs comes on, what, the last 5 minutes or so prior to injury time? And suddenly you're looking and going, yeah, we had quite a lot of youngsters on the bench on the weekend, but, you know, the issues that we were having in terms of turning games around or trying to win games from the bench over this winter that we've had and the absentees we've had, certainly in forward areas, suddenly you're kind of looking ahead and going, right, Ebbs is coming up to probably ready to start very soon again. France is now coming on and making enough of an impact to, you'd hope, put some trust in the manager. You've still got Ayew to come back. I don't know how long that absentee is, and same with Edouard, but you've got Mateta playing very well. You've got, and suddenly you're looking around going, okay, we're almost, can we come out of the fetal position again and start to believe? And at the end of that game, Longy, has to make you think, yeah, of course, we've always tried to stay in games, but haven't necessarily always had the personnel, if not the belief, to rescue it lately. But that close to that game is going to do a wonder for the player, the squad and the management, right?
Yeah, and I think the fans as well, mate. I think this season, it's been really flat and there's been lots of noise and negativity within our fan base and infighting and people slagging each other off and, like, lots of people have different opinions, and I feel like people don't respect other people's opinions anymore. I mean, I'm one that you can have your opinion and that's absolutely fine. I'll have my opinion. But I feel like more now this season than ever, there's a lot of guys within the social media fan base and also going to games, they're coming up with loads of nonsense. And yeah, it's been a hard season because injuries have absolutely killed us. There's no doubt that the club, their transfer policy has not worked out. It was a gamble. I think in that gamble, that's what one of the main reasons they gave Roy the one more season, because they could see him, that he's the guy who could do it on a shoestring like he did before, which is unfair to him. And it's put him in a bit of a position where he's had to come across negatively. And you can see he's not been too happy with what the squad and stuff like that. But yeah, I think Saturday, it would have given, like you say, the players, the management staff, and definitely us fans, a massive boost. Because Bournemouth was horrendous. Like, the end of that game was, I've ever felt as shit as I did that night. I stood there and the noise and someone throwing a bottle at Roy. Like, I mean, the geezer, he's an old fella, mate. You know what I mean? It was a horrible, horrible night. And I was down for a few days from that. Just, I couldn't believe how sort of low it had got. And then the reaction on the Saturday against Liverpool, we were unbelievable for 75 minutes. We were unbelievable. And any worries I had that the players had given up on Roy were gone. And I knew, yeah, the players, they're still having this manager. So we need to have him as well. As long as he's here, we need to have him. And then Saturday, again, it's just cemented it. And it's took it to another level because we managed to pull an unbelievable result out of bag. And it's just given everyone a lift, you know?
Yeah, it was nice to come away with that with something as well, because I felt like the Liverpool performance also was quite galvanising and a really impressive response, but to come away from it was still quite frustrating. You thought,
yeah,
God, even if we're going to play well against these big sides, are we still just going to be in 3 weeks' time and be no better points-wise? But to get one there on Saturday in the way that we did, buzzing. Everyone should be really happy with that. I feel like we could snooze on this part one for a long time. I could even give some word. Jaro Riedewald played 80 minutes, guys. Like, can we just take that in for a second? You know, like, the team we put out and how we did that, it's brilliant. And I couldn't be happier for the squad and the management. We'll save some of that extra positivity for 3-2-1 as well, which will be cut up next, actually, in part two, along with some listener questions. It's funny, we do well. There's far fewer listener questions. Isn't that funny how it works? But so we'll bunch those two together in part two after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. It's part two of the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Let's go into 3-2-1 then. For those that don't know, each of us bring forward someone or something that we think is deemed of praiseworthy and holding up a little higher than everything else from the previous week of Palace. And then between us, we attribute 3, 2, or 1 point to them, and they go into our official chart table, which JD has locked away somewhere. Funny enough, the listener questions that we've had, two of them were very, very similar. One was Ian Corley saying, has being knocked off the top of the 3-2-1 league table galvanized Mateta to start contributing again? And Lee Garrod has also said, is the pod as excited as I am at the prospect of JP in his rightful position at the top of the 3-2-1 league? I mean, he got knocked off for what, a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, but Jack, I don't know who. I'm not suggesting you're going to put him at the top, but you know he might be in the mixer today.
He's in the mixer for sure, isn't he? I mean, I might have to have an awkward conversation here because I'm pretty sure I bet my mortgage he wouldn't get another point this season. So, but yeah, I'm gonna put him forward. I thought that was his best performance in a Palace shirt. Thought he was absolutely exceptional and just has this knack of just turning up, as you say, Jack, this time of year. Just recall him. The new year of Vieira's first season going into the Norwich game and then scoring the winner at the Den. When he first joined, his first goal was against Brighton in January as well. So he does love the festive period going into the new year. Can't deny it. But technically speaking, he won't have many harder tasks than doing what he did on Saturday. And he did it absolutely brilliantly. I've listened to some kind of non-Palace specific podcasts and everybody's called him out in terms of praise. Can you call out someone positively? I don't know. But anyway, they did. You can call them out. Yeah.
You could pick out or highlight.
Pick him out. Yeah, they picked him out. That's probably better.
Yeah.
As somebody who did really, really well. And as I said, I'm sort of kind of repeating myself here, but there's not much to add from my point about him in the first half. I just feel he's best when he's playing instinctively and causing chaos. And even against a team as well trained and a group of players as well trained as cities, they couldn't deal with Hurricane Jean-Philippe, and it resulted in a very chaotic penalty being given. Phil Foden, who's technically gifted and time a ball beautifully, even he was impacted by the hurricane of Jean-Philippe coming into the penalty area. And yeah, the only surprise was that JP didn't take the penalty, but as I said, it doesn't really matter. One goal, 2-2 for him. And I'm quite pleased for him because he does get stick, some of it deserved, but it must be pleasing for him to know that he's contributed significantly to what was a very, very good point. So, yeah, Jean-Philippe Mateta for me this week.
Yeah, and, you know, I have my criticism about him as well. I feel like for someone so tall, he can look quite unconvincing aerially. But the hold-up play Saturday, from what I've seen, was really good. And, yeah, that chaos factor is enough. I feel like, especially against some of those stronger teams, I feel like another one of his really strong games where it was quite similar. So with the 3-0, Vieira's 3-0 against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I seem to remember him having a sort of similarly, the kind of centre-backs team couldn't quite work out how to manage between them. And yeah, there's something in that. And it's just about using it right and whether that's him applying it correctly or the way we use him.
That penalty on Saturday wasn't entirely different from the penalty he won against Liverpool. And I think it's just his size. It just disrupts the equilibrium of a centre-half. He just doesn't know where he is. And the fact that Jean-Philippe Mateta is 6'4", 6'5", can get his leg in front of a defender where other strikers might not be able to, I think,
he's probably contribute to both.
Yeah, deceptively
big,
quick.
He's all leg.
All leg. Deceptively smart in the sense that he kind of read both those kind of ball movements. And, yeah. If that Jean-Philippe hangs around, yeah, great. That's the hope. And the hope is that Roy can now galvanise him And so look what you did against the best team in Europe, the current treble winners. Can you do that against Brighton on Thursday night? Can you do that against Brentford in a couple of weeks' time? Can you do that against Everton in the Cup? Can you do it every week, Jean-Philippe? And that's the test now.
Yeah. It's funny. Someone, I don't know how accurate or recent this is, Alex Achini has sent us two comparative stats. Edouard, 192 minutes per goal or assist this season. Mateta, 79 minutes per goal or assist this season.
At Haaland levels, that is.
Yeah, I assume that includes the Plymouth Cup game, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. But Longy, the way things are, I think the second choice striker is quite difficult for a team of our level because we're never doing well. And I presume that the reserve or whoever's backup thinks, well, I should be getting games here because, you know, we're not winning every week. And for someone who's kind of been in that position quite a lot of his time at Palace, despite everything, despite the links away, if he's desperate to kick down the door and leave, he doesn't necessarily kick up a fuss publicly, does he? He seems to just get on with it and enjoy his football. And when called upon, you're still going to get the odd performance like this. Is it difficult to expect too much more from somebody in his position?
I think this season I've lost my patience with JP so many times, and to the point of I'm questioning even bringing him on. What's the point of bringing him on? He's not doing anything because he seems to have lost his any sort of form that he's had since the Plymouth game.
Yeah.
But I was having a conversation last week at work, and one of the guys I know through work is really best friends with Nathaniel Klein, and he was telling me that the squad, everyone in the squad loves JP. They love him. He is massive in that change room. He's one of the main characters. He brings the banter. He loves the banter. And every single player in that squad loves him. And I think someone like that within the squad, same with like Remy Matthews, them sort of characters are so important. So after the conversation I had with my mate, I was a little bit more for JP. And then he come on and scored the penalty against Liverpool. But even at that moment, I was losing my head, thinking, "Why are you taking that penalty?" but yeah, like Jack's already said, Saturday, hands down, was his best performance in the shirt. He scored some real good goal, like the back heel against Brighton and the goal against Millwall. Like I think he's already cemented cult hero status at Crystal Palace. There's no doubt with the goals that he scored. But Saturday, yeah, it was the most complete performance he's ever given. And all I want to see is more of that. Like, I'm not expecting them levels every time, but just he was putting in the effort that I always question. Why is he not putting effort in? Why is he not using his physical size? He should be so much more physical against defenders, and he should do that all the time. Sometimes he can't win headers against shorter centre-halves. But he brought his A game Saturday, and yeah, more of the same. If he can do that, I'm more than happy for him to stay at Crystal Palace. The rumours are we only get a striker in if he leaves. I feel like we need another striker within the squad, within the group, and keep him. JP, he's I'll give him his props for Saturday. He was excellent.
Yeah. What you said there, what Klein said there, I think it was also in the. I think James McArthur said something quite similar, sort of offhand in the interview.
Yeah,
And Jack as well. So
I listened to that podcast on the way home from the shift that I'd just spoken to my mate about him. So I was like, there you go.
Yeah,
so you couldn't help but not to spoil for anyone that hasn't listened, but that run of Barry Noe when Nick Pope makes that amazing save last season, and
yeah.
He's still walking in Australia being like, my time will come. And what happens, he scores probably the most important goal of last season home to Leicester. So the guy backs himself. And I think I recall Ebbs and Mark Gay doing a piece for some Premier League productions or someone earlier in the season. And both of them just start cracking up at the mere mention of JP. And
it's Football
just,
Focus, it was.
Was it Football Focus? And they just loved it. They just loved talking about him. The fact he came into pre-season or at one point last season with a completely shaven head and not told anyone, and they love it. So, I'm pleased because he, as long as he's just said, clearly a great character. He's got a lot of love from the other players. So if the other players are backing him, the fans should still. And if he puts in performances like Saturday, it's going to be hard not to, because it really was a very, very good Premier League striker's performance, let alone Jean-Philippe Mateta.
Thursday night. If Thursday night, if there's,
honestly, if he backs on Thursday, it could be, yeah, it could be a good one.
Could be statue time.
Statue time. everything Longy just said, though, but when Longy was saying about, you know, how you feel about him, you just know that within months of him going, whenever that might be, if that's January or summer or a couple of years' time, how quickly we're going to be longing for JP to be back. Ah, oh, dear, that guy, what he had in him, you know. Could really do with JP off the bench or something like that, you know.
When he's scoring in the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, sure,
that's the fear with these guys. You lose a trick.
Indeed. Yeah. So we've got JP up for 3-2-1. Ben Long, what have you got in mind? Who have you got in mind?
I am going to go Dean Henderson. Again, I was touched on it earlier. There's been a lot of negative noise this season from a lot of our fan base. Why are we spending this money on a goalkeeper? We need this, we need that. I know for a fact that the signing of Dean Henderson made no effect on what we were going to spend on any striker. If the deal we could have done for a striker was available, we'd have done that and still done Dean Henderson. £20 million or £15 million rising to £20 million for a 26-year-old, potentially world-class goalkeeper is a no-brainer for me. Whether we had Sam Johnson at the club or not, Sam Johnson was going to leave Crystal Palace. He was homesick in the summer, and I think he fell in love with Crystal Palace. That run of games where he won the number one shirt, and then he got told he was number one by Roy in the summer. I think, and then just the love he got his own song, Mad Quick. He fell in love with Crystal Palace and decided he didn't want to leave anymore. However, he's, 30 years old? So he's 4 years older than Dean Henderson anyway. The deal was a no-brainer. And the negative noise about it all just didn't... It was confounded because he got injured after 20 minutes in the cup game. And then all of a sudden, he's this injury-prone goalkeeper. And again, it's, why did we do it? Why did we do it? Saturday shows you why we spent the money on him. He was unbelievable. The full stretch save was one for the photo album. But there was numerous saves in that game which were world-class. And the confidence that you could see he was giving the defence. When you're playing in defence, if your goalie is unreal behind you, you are so much more confident. And I could just see it, watching the highlights back and watching the game back. I felt like the defenders were so relaxed given the ball. It just seemed to up their confidence levels a few percent, which they don't really need anyway because our centre-halves are two of the best in the league. But yeah, I think his whole contribution to the game, keeping us in the game with his saves. I saw some negative comments about his distribution, but he's not fully fit, clearly. I mean, he'd been training for 2 weeks, but people don't understand that goalkeepers do need to have some sort of match fitness in them with regards to the distribution. But yeah, I thought he was unbelievable, and he silenced a lot of his doubters on the weekend and people questioning why we paid the money. And I know it's only one game, but for me, I think Selzy said it on the post-match pod, he will go on to either make a lot of appearances for Crystal Palace or we will make money on that guy because he will be going to a top club and he's going to be, he'll be England's number one one day as well. So,
yeah, I think my favourite of the lot, even though it might be one he's more expected to save, I really enjoyed that Alvarez, the save from Alvarez, where he gets down low pretty quick. I don't think Alvarez can do much more of that header. So to get it down low and pick a corner, and the reflexes were not rusty, certainly. I was surprised. I thought, I did think, oh, maybe the way, because of the reports prior to the game, I thought maybe he'll have someone else taking the goal kicks, possibly.
Yeah.
But that didn't come to pass. And yeah, I think when a new goalkeeper comes in, It's a bit rough, is it, Jack, to expect sort of magic and big, huge saves immediately. I remember Guaita coming in, and because Baroni was such a kind of... There were so many highlights of his time at Palace. Guaita, when you're looking for a new kind of permanent number one, you're thinking, right, are you going to pull out some magic stops here? And he was actually just quite steady and dependable. It was a different kind of goalkeeping sort of reliance. But Henderson's coming and already this early is going, no, I will save you points as well as kind of just putting some trust in you, which, given the timing of the Johnson injury, is very helpful right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, first thing I think about him is how confident he is. He's a very confident guy, trusting his own ability and Yeah, that's very evident. But you need that as a goalkeeper. You need to back yourself, particularly when you're going somewhere like the Etihad. As long as he says 26, has played a lot of league football across a number of different managers, across a number of different formations. But, you know, I totally agree with Longy in that, you know, Joachim Anderson and Mark Gay will be enjoying having, you know, good quality goalkeeper behind them. But how many goalkeepers are going to have their league debut behind Mark Gay and Joachim Anderson? Like, that's a good back, centre-back duo to go. I know it's a three on Saturday, but you know, that part of the squad is very, very strong. And as Selzy said in the post-match pod, in terms of goalkeeper department, that is, if both are fit, that is European levels. That's top quality recruitment. And I've heard similar to Longy in terms of that deal. That deal did not get in the way of other business. We did not sacrifice signing the next hot striker, the next big thing to come. That did not happen. That money was almost from like the savings of saving for a rainy day, and that deal was too good to ignore. So, you know, whatever happens with Sam Johnston moving forward, and there are still murmurings that other clubs are still, despite Sam Johnston signing that contract, looking at Johnston in January. Newcastle are without a number one goalkeeper at the moment, and Sam Johnston's been playing at a very high level. But I was so assured by Dean Henderson's performance on Saturday. I'm really quite comfortable with whichever one of them is starting. But as I said in the first part, I think Selzy's point that he's talked about previously in terms of Vicente and Sam Johnston in the possessions 9/10 of the law, I think that is probably true now. And Roy won't want to mix around with his goalkeepers. You've seen it. We see it when Brighton come on Thursday. You know, a lot, obviously, the focus is on Arsenal in terms of David Raya and Aaron Ramsdale, but Brighton have been pissing around with their goalkeepers this season. And that, is it Bart Verbruggen, the Dutch guy they've got? Like, I don't think he's particularly benefited from being in one week and out the next week. And of the two goalkeepers they've got, I think Jason Steele's been by far their better goalkeeper, but for some whatever reason, they're kind of mixing and matching. So I don't think I'd expect Roy to do that. I think he'll stick with one of them. I guess the fortune is we have a cup competition starting in the next 3 weeks. So both goalkeepers, if fit, will get no minutes, you'd imagine. But yeah, really pleased with Dean Henderson. Good league debut as they go.
Indeed. Have we had a penalty specialist in goal before? Nico Vassan might stretch it, I guess, because of the actual shootout at Sunderland. But Henderson might be our first one in quite a while, right?
Has he got a reputation as a... Oh, of course. Forest last year, he saved a few, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, he won't have to. That won't be required. But, you know, it's nice to know that have a goalkeeper that's got that in their back pocket. So I'm trying to think Palace-wise. There's not... The list isn't obvious. I think Julian only saved one or two in his whole time with us.
Cedric Bertolin,
oh my goodness. I was looking, for unexplained reasons, I was looking at Cedric Carrasco's Wikipedia page earlier.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's up to now?
I think he has retired now, but the amount he finished at Galatasaray, like this guy played, his career thing is amazing, and there's just a one-game loan at Crystal Palace. Yeah, make sense of that. Oh, that was when I was looking at the Fanzi Sanji High thing. I was just checking what year it was, and then started going down a rabbit hole of Palace squads on Wikipedia.
Good morning.
Yeah, I know I'm not the only one listener. I know you can do that right now. Actually, you can listen to this and do that. Nothing's stopping you. Right, that leads me to put somebody forward.
Yeah, go on, Joe. Who are you bringing in?
I'll go over someone we've spoken about already. I feel like David Ozo, welcome to the party. I think that's somebody who I hope now is just part of the first team squad mix. I'm sure he's been part of the training and the senior team training for a little while now, still getting the occasional game at the kind of youth levels, because, you know, that game time is still very valuable for players at his age. But there's a performance, there's an opportunity that was grabbed with both hands. And while it may not affect what we do in January, I suspect Steve Parrish is stroking his chin, though. It's nice to have another academy product that we can look to now. Not out of hope, even, but just there's a level there that can get us through some games and maybe get some games over the line between now and the end of the season. Which, at 18 years old, at the Premier League level, there's something that Selzy says quite a lot around kind of Roy being a bit hesitant with throwing youngsters in. And it's essentially you've got to be 18, 19 and already be among the sort of 100 best players in your position in the world to get regular minutes in the Premier League. And so for Ozo to play in what will be one of the, you know, as debuts go, that's one of the biggest of your life, right? Away at Man City, who've just won the treble and who are now, I believe, on their way to the other side of the world for the Club World Cup, possibly make that. Does it count as a quadruple or does it have to be this year?
One of them, it's like Community Shield, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
stick with the treble.
Yeah. Still a decent achievement. So for him to come in against the Rodri, against the Foden, cause Foden enough problems in the penalty build up, but also, yeah, just generally speaking, just a complete pest and the energy that we needed at a time where with more and more people hobbling off, you're starting to look around and you could be, you know, we remember 2 months ago, I think that Forest game was probably the real low point in terms of who was available. And so now it's really great that out of that scenario, out of that storm, comes what looks like a really promising, certainly season, if not future beyond that for David Ozo. So I think that's worthy of giving him a little pat on the back and throwing him in the mix here.
There's not much more to say about David Ozo because I think we covered it in the first part and you just added to it there, Joe. But I think for me, the key thing with his entry into the game kind of goes beyond the game in terms of Roy taking a number of the youngsters with the first team last week, then taking them to Manchester. So Tyre Adamola, Ola Adebomi, David Ozo and Sean Graham, all training with the first team last week, as well as Franco Uma. Like, that's five players that have come into the first team squad. Needs must, but it's needs must with the caveat that they're all clearly able to mix it with the first team. And clearly David was kind of at the top of the list in terms of who was most ready. But I think, and you alluded to it in the first part, Longy's mentioned it too, the fact that Roy is so often charged with this, doesn't trust youngsters. Well, he's kind of had his hand forced in this instance, but I've never believed that. I've always felt that if there was an opportunity to give a youngster who was ready to get minutes, he will give it to them. And I think we'll be adding David Ozo's name. But come the end of this season, we'll be talking about David Ozo's kind of implementation to the first team squad, like we talked about Roy's use of Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Tyreek Mitchell.
Yeah,
and it's great.
I don't think he'll be wearing 52 next season, put it that way.
No.
And again, the amount of youngsters that travelled and trained, as well as the handful that made it on the subs bench, you know, Malcolm Abue might not see it the same way given the circumstances of his arrival. But if you're someone,
he needs a loan, that guy,
big time. But if you're somebody else in the loan system, if you're Ola Adebomi or another player that of that kind of level that we're trying to approach at a teenage level, there's at least a hint of a pathway there. You know that, you know, this is a club you want to come to, and yeah, you know, we're not going to fill up a 25-man squad full of just senior experienced players. We're going to need to call upon people at some point in the year. This is always, especially the winter, a club of Palace's size, I feel like we have an injury crisis every winter, at least every other season. And it's something we just have to cope with. This season, I think it's been worse than some of the others recently, but it means you are going to, there are glimmers of hope here for, which at Premier League level, there's not many Premier League clubs that are going to offer that for players. They'll just do the square peg stuff. And so I think long-term there's hope there for more David Ozos, for more first team appearances. And you mentioned the cup game, Jack. I think that Everton Thursday night, we'll see a lot more of that. I think it'd be very interesting to see what lineup comes out on that. Okay. So we've got there JP Mateta, looking to regain his crown from Jefferson Lerma. You've got Dean Henderson, who I believe will be his first point to the season here. And the same David Ozo, two here, I think, are going to get their first points. Who takes the maximum, do we think?
Well, talking of first entries of the season, I think we should let Longy allocate the points given it's his first appearance of
the
season.
Go on, then.
The way I see the 3-2-1 there were the three we picked, I see Dean Henderson could arguably say he was one of the reasons we got a point, because he won us the point with keeping us in the game. I'd say JP, his best performance for the club, I think we all agree with that, would be in second place. And then we don't want to get too carried away with David Ozo, so we'll give him the 1 point this week, and I expect to see a few more points this season for him when he gets a few more appearances.
I'm more than happy with that. Are you, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. There we go. I'll be interested to see an update on the table and where that does leave JP Mateta.
I think my mortgage might be safe. I think he might just be missing out.
Yeah, you're cutting it fine. I think you've just,
Won't be making those assertions again. Ridiculous.
Yeah. What's this I'm seeing in the Zoom chat here? Your envelope will be in the post. Okay, that's interesting, Jack. I saw that. I said I'd put the listener questions in amongst 3-2-1 here. I think there's literally one question left that we haven't covered. And even then, I think we kind of have. Alante Herons has said, incredible fight from the lads in the last two fixtures. That's all for Roy, no? Which I think we kind of mentioned in passing, but maybe we kind of need to go to again. Given some of the accusations that were thrown around, some of the frustrations after that Bournemouth game especially, the Liverpool game obviously wasn't a one-off. And with our backs to the wall, perhaps it does suit us to play a Man City, a Liverpool, a Chelsea, relatively speaking, but to also get points out of those games. I think we know a well-organised Roy Hodgson side can frustrate teams. I think to still get points out of those with the players that we've had missing, yeah, if they're not interested, if they're kind of looking, oh, you know, if they weren't interested, if they didn't think, if they thought Roy's race was done as Palace manager and there's talk in the dressing room of someone else having been spoken to, or they're reading the paper and going, oh yeah, your number's up, Roy. I don't think we'd have seen those two performances. I think there's far too much respect given to him there. And I think that should reassure everybody for not just the rest of the season and the rest of his time here at the club, but certainly this festive period, which I think after the Bournemouth result, especially in that run of games, the Lutons, the Evertons and that game, suddenly the fear of where a point's going to come from. There's nothing to say we're going to go pick 9 points up now, but it's still, there's a little bit more confidence, there's a little bit more reassurance in, there's at least going to be a minimum level set here by what we have got available. And you've got to give some credit to Roy for that if you haven't already, right?
I've raised Lonnie on that one.
Yeah, well, I think the problem, I mean, there was a lot of upset when we sacked Vieira, and because I don't think any of us wanted it to happen, because I think most people loved having Pat Vieira as our manager. He just seemed to fit the club, got the club, and we'll always have that great season. But for me, watching the games, and I know it was a tough run, but we hadn't won for a long time, and I was looking at the players and I was thinking some of them are not necessarily aren't having him, but I mean, look, Ebbs weren't even getting in the team. Mm. And then literally Roy comes in and then he becomes a world-beater and gets back in the England squad. It's just like, that's what I was worried about after the Bournemouth game, was that, are we in that situation now with Roy, are the players not having? But yeah, the last two games have showed, and the comments that some players have said, they've quoted the manager, and listening to that James McArthur podcast, the way he talks about Roy, it's just like, the guy is so highly respected. I can't see him losing the dressing room. I really can't. And I think we as fans we've got to get behind the guy. Unless we are banging trouble, he's going to be here till the end of the season. I really do think that. I really think the club have faith in him to keep us up. And I know it would be like, oh, it's a season wasted, but we're just going to have to suck it up this year and see through the season and have the highs and the lows of it. But we've got to stay with the guy, because I think the players are with him, so we've got to be with him as well, you know?
Yeah.
The only thing I'll add, Joe, is in 7 days, Roy went from being interviewed post-match Liverpool talking about his love for the game is disappearing quickly and everything associated with the PGMOL. 7 days later, he's laughing like a schoolboy at equalising the last minute the Etihad. Yeah. So, you know, there's the turnaround in football. And as you said at the start of it, you know, football fans are simple souls enough. To be honest, I think probably football players and football managers are probably the same in that really the result dictates the mood. And if you can go and get a point in such a fashion, I can imagine, yeah, he enjoyed that first glass of red on Saturday night. I bloody hope he did anyway.
I was just going to say, I think it would have been a celebratory glass rather than a commiserated bottle, as he mentioned.
A savoured sip.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, well done, Roy. Yeah, deserves at least a shout after the last week or so, which leads us nicely into Thursday night. We'll get into that in part three after this. Welcome to part three of the 5-Year Plan podcast, episode 505. We're just a couple of days away from hosting Brighton Hove Albion. You know, always a massive game, always a game that I, you know.
Full name privileges there, Joe. Full name privileges for the opposition there.
Yeah, why not? Just this one time. And
polite.
It's always a fixture I sort of quake my boots for, no matter how in form we are, or, you know, something even worse if we're horrendously out of form. I rarely look to this game and think, well, this will be the one that turns it around for us. However, you have to acknowledge the difference between stumbling into this game off the back of some really kind of dispiriting results against Liverpool and City, off the back of existing dispiriting results and performances, to come into this game off the back of a good performance against Liverpool, if not a really frustrating result, and a really surprised but well-earned point at Man City, and players returning, suddenly, you know, you can just take this game objectively and find plenty of hope there, right? What would you say, Jack?
I hate this match. I hate this fixture. Now, living in the part of the world that I do, working with the football fans, football supporters of who they support, it's one that I just really don't relish until the actual match itself. And when the match gets going, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what being a football fan's all about. I love 11 of these men. I hate 11 of these men. It's quite easy to assess. But in the build-up to it, I find it all a bit weird. I find the build-up, particularly since Brighton have been promoted, I found the build-up between elements of both fan bases to be a bit cringy, to be honest. I think some have made it a bit more than it should be, and I just find that the whole build-up around the game is often a little bit misplaced. That said, what I have noted since the City game is the change in mood from Palace fans. As you say, Joe, going, you know, from after that Bournemouth game, the idea of Bournemouth, the idea of Brighton at home was a terrifying prospect. Not even necessarily Brighton, just the idea of them. And now
there was talk of that being the kind of, is it going to be the coffin nail for Hodgson?
He'll be gone after that. Yeah. I'll give it. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the mood is completely changed. And that point on Saturday has completely changed the mood. That is also combined with, you know, I do get a sense of, you know, living where I live, is there is an element of the Brighton fan base who, despite winning the Europa League group, despite being relatively comfortable in mid-table in the Premier League, there are some Brighton fans who are saying that Roberto De Zerbi needs to change gear and do something differently, which I just find absolutely mind-blowing, to be honest. The guy has worked wonders for them, and we do look on enviously at their European tour. They've had a great draw in itself. I mean, just the draw itself was amazing, but they've won that group relatively comfortably in the end, and are now, you know, without European football until the last 16 in the Europa League. So, you know, acknowledging that, I still find it really surprising that an element of the Brighton fan base is thinking they could and should be doing better, and would look at losing at Arsenal as, you know, a way of critiquing the manager, which, you know, Arsenal are top of the league and will probably head into Christmas top of the league. So I don't know. It's a funny one. The only thing I would say in terms of Brighton's current performance, they are not at the levels they were at last season in terms of domestic form, but that domestic form has been impacted by their response to the Thursday-Sunday schedule. Their form in those games immediately after European commitments has been terrible, and their performance on Sunday, albeit against a very good Arsenal team, was shabby, to put it mildly. You know, I think first half was 15 shots to nil. So then they're not the free-flowing Brighton that they were, but I'm fearful of saying that out loud because I'm worried that Thursday night will be when they do turn it on.
Yeah, I look at things like, I think they're on their second or third choice left back at the moment, possibly fourth. I think James Milner played left back on the weekend.
And they've got a young lad playing at right back. Grandson of Paul Hinshelwood.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I saw that name and just thought, surely not. That must be three generations there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think the son played there too.
Yeah, Adam Hinshelwood played for Brighton.
Yeah.
At the Withdean.
At the Withdean.
the Withdean days.
That's me. But yeah, I see things like that, and I look for. Oh, maybe that's someone. Stick a lise on them, but it's never that simple, is it? Longer this game conjures up all kinds of horrible prospects as well as exciting ones. We are, though, it doesn't work like this. We are overdue a home victory against these guys. We haven't put them to the sword for a while now. It's a reflection of how far they've come as much as what we've got going on. But I think our form against them has not been great for quite a while now. There's a lot of draws in there, but what impact would it make us getting 3 points over the line on Thursday?
Well, I said about how we should all be boosted from the performances of the last two games and the result on Saturday. If we beat them on Thursday, then I think you're going to have 90% of the fan base back on side, fully behind a club. Then we can stop all this crap of Parish out and all that rubbish that I'm hearing. And then we're going into like the rest of the busy period, bouncing, flying, confident, players back. Yeah, so it would be a massive, massive boost to everyone in the club, the fans, the players, the management staff. I'm the same as Jack. I hate this game. I think it's because it means so much, because they are big rivals to us and it's the big game. And I do get nervous, tensioned. I feel sick always on a match day. Because I just don't want to lose to them. And what I've been doing this season on Thursday nights, I don't go on social media. I don't have Sky Sports on. I pretend that I don't know that they're in Europe because of how jealous we are that they've managed to do that before us. But one thing does get my goat is people comparing us and them all the time. It's chalk and cheese. It's different locations. They've been able to build a stadium in a location brand new. They've got an owner who will pump money in till the day he dies, probably.
And he doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally different scenarios. And I just hate seeing people going, why can't we do what they're doing? And their whole scouting system, fair play to them. They're doing really well. Part of me is hoping that they go down the same route as Southampton. They're selling all the best players and it catches up with them one day. I hate these games, the build-up to them. But when we do win them, there's no better feeling. Like, when did we beat them last time? Was it just before lockdown?
I think it was. Was it the IU lockdown?
Brilliant. The feeling. And we'll always have the playoff semi-final, which they will never have a big game like that over us.
At Selhurst, though, I think it's 2018, Roy's first season,
3-2. Yeah, 3-2, yeah. And
all in the first half, and we were hanging on desperately.
Yeah, we were hanging on.
Remember Glenn Murray air-kicking from about 2 yards out. And then the one before that, I think is Blassie, putting Bruno in the stand with his arse. Lewis Dunk sent off after 5 minutes. Oh, my God, what a take for that game.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
That's how long it goes back for the 11 home
years.
Games. 11 years. Yeah, for home victories, it's not great. I mean, away wise, I think I've also forgotten. You've got the IU one, but you've also got the Benteke in the last minute, which
lockdown football. Which don't talk about lockdown football much.
No, except we've named both
touches.
Goals. Yeah,
two
exactly.
In their penalty box in the whole game we won.
Yeah, that might be the last time we beat them. I'm just thinking. I'm trying to.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, we'll be. Yeah, it must be, yeah.
Two draws, Conor Gallagher, 2 goals.
Yeah.
Against them.
Yeah.
And then I'd actually forgotten about last year's home game, and that was the keeper dropping it on James Tompkins' foot and he put it in.
Yep.
Yes. That was the end for him at Brighton, wasn't it?
I do. I'm intrigued to see who we have available to us, because it could be that we really go from famine to feast quite quickly here. We could have a number of key players returning. Longy's mentioned Jefferson Lerma likely to come back in. Ebbs should be fit to start. Michael Elise, fit and firing. It's exciting. If we get a couple of players back, and the starting 11 looks a bit stronger, then it'll be a proper good game. And I think Roy will get them going. If he's able to get them going against challenges like Liverpool and City, I think he'll know how to get them ready for this week. And we'll see what comes. It could either be a great Christmas or a bit of a dire one.
Yeah, the players know. David Ozo mentions Thursday night in his post-match interview about how big the game is on Thursday. So the players know.
That's a really interesting point, Elon, because actually this is also, I mean, we haven't mentioned this week yet, but this is the first Palace-Brighton without Wilf. And I just wonder which team, and particularly which set of fans, might respond to that better. Because Brighton fans love having Wilf to go at. And he typically would drive their atmosphere in the away end or at the Amex because of whatever he did. And without having that panto villain, 'tis the season, after all, who will get them going? That will be quite an interesting dynamic shift for them, because it's been so easy for them to hang their hat on. And who knows, it might be us crying out for Wilf with 10 minutes to go saying any chance. But I do wonder whether that might actually impact the kind of Brighton focus, because he has been such an easy target for them for the last decade or so.
I think if they're looking for omens, they're probably quietly happy that Joel Ward is going to miss the game, because his legendary unbeaten record is going to remain, because he won't be playing by the looks of it. But this is the timing of the fixture, the last game before Christmas. It's, as I say, it's a fixture that I think the most sick to my stomach I've been, that emotion at a game, was the playoff when we took the lead in the semi-final. I've never been more antsy at football. I was kind of walking up and marching up and down the row, sort of telling people, excuse me, just walking around in circles, like delirious, until the second went in, because I was just so nervous. And the idea of that, the importance of this, just in terms of how it can like really lift everyone. You don't want us to sort of lose any goodwill that's been earned over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I'm trying to look at it positively for now. Try and look at it like it's an opportunity for heroes to be made for a lot of these young players, possibly. I think what you were saying, Jack, about famine to feast quite quickly, I think at the very least you're going to see, you know, there's players out there that might be able to go and give us an hour, or on the flip side, only half an hour. But between them together, that's probably enough for us to do some proactive substitutions and really, whether it's hold on to what we've got or kill them off, that's something we've not had a lot of in recent weeks and months. So, I mean, this could well be the first time that only Ebbs and Nolise have only started together at Luton, and we got like
they've played 73 minutes together so far this season.
Yeah, so like stuff like that coming together right on time. Oh, hey, I love it.
Can I just say, while I mentioned that Wilf obviously will not be present, I just wonder whether the Palace number 11 might have a bit to say on Thursday night.
I'll be on the pitch, I think. I'm just thinking like that would be, I'll be there in a Santa hat or something like that, just going absolutely potty.
That is what they call the passing of the torch, if that happens.
Oh, fully justified if he does something on Thursday night,
Yeah.
Speaking of Wilf on Thursday nights, they've
written in the stars, that mate.
Yeah, are they?
Have they got them? Is that who they've got?
I haven't seen.
No, they've dropped into the Europa, haven't
they? Galatasaray got Sparta Prague, so.
Oh, okay.
They can still meet. I think that would be the most poetic way of seeing them out. Oh, but yeah.
Yes.
But oh yeah. Anyway, Thursday, Jack. Just do you know the setup for our next episode? Is it likely to be?
So I think we're going to try. No, I think we're going to try and get one in just before Christmas, just to talk over the Brighton game, because weird time of the season. We're going to have to do a double header at some point. But I think preference is that we do double header of Brentford or Chelsea and Brentford rather than Brighton, and then wait 5 days to talk about it. Yeah. We might need to talk about that sooner. I'm hoping we do.
Yeah.
If you don't hear from us, listeners, because we've been rolled over 3-0.
Yeah. So keep an eye out. You'll still get a post-match pod as usual. So if you're a patron, that'll be there for you. And if you're not a patron, no pressure, but I would highly recommend. I think everyone on this call is a patron for FYP. Patron is Patreon, and it's a 5-year plan, and you'll kind of get the different tiers there of what you can get.
got to shout out Robin Selzy for doing a 1 a.m. pod the other night. That is dedication.
Between them, that and I think that post-match pod's worth the... You get early access to these episodes as well if you're a patron. You get them, I think, a day early, half a day early. But the post-match pod in it is enough, is makes it worth the money itself. So a sort of rare...
The Selzy dividend.
Yes, quite. And, you know, I thought he was going to be a lot more like the cat that got the cream after that Henderson performance. He was relatively restrained.
Very modest, I thought.
Yeah, maybe that's a man that knows there's even more to come, possibly.
But, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. But yeah, let's wrap up there before we get too deep into your evenings and ruin your dinner. Longy, thank you so much for coming back on. It's always good having you on. JD always makes a mention of it. You're one of our kind of favourites that we should always get on a little bit more. So delighted to have you on this episode. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, great to be on, mate. And like I say, mate, any time you want, just give me a shout and I'll be more than happy to come back on.
Much appreciated. And Jack, thank you very much for being alongside me as often as you are, always holding me through these hot seat stints, these shifts.
And I'll be calling upon you next week. So, yeah. And I think it's JD taking us into the new year to do a reflective piece, as he likes to do.
Very nice. Well, yeah, and
thoughtful kind of guy. So I think he wants to look back and
indeed.
Through 2023.
Yeah, and you know, he's already delivered that Christmas gift of the MacArthur interview. If you haven't checked that out already, that's available on the feed. That I think that concludes us for this week. So thank you very much, both of you guys. Thank you very much, listener. And fingers crossed for Thursday night. Let's hope we do it. Let's find out.
Podcast Network.